the Head Stuff Podcast Network for Doe, Fado, and Aaron. Welcome to Mother Folklore, a podcast about words, Irish words, and words from Ireland. I am Dara O'Shea.
I'm Geraldine McAvoy.
And I'm Patrick Ivonic.
How is getting on?
Yeah. It's all good. Still living, you know. Yeah,
we're still here. I mean, I'm an old man now with one foot in the grave and one foot on the edge of it. Oh, yeah. Sure, look, we're still upright. It's no point complaining.
We are indeed. No point complaining. It's been an interesting week. In some ways, it's something has happened that it happens every now and then, in that a certain Irish writer went viral for 2 days, was trending in Ireland for a couple of days in a row. And people said, well, she doesn't have any new books out. Maybe she does.
She's a sequel.
She's a sequel. And
I'd be fucking shocked if she had a new book out.
Because she's been dead since and released a sequel just before she died.
Because she's been dead since 1958. since before the V came into this folklore, she was like, I'm getting out of here. This place is fucked.
This would be even worse than Harper Lee. With Harper Lee, they just broke into her nursing home and found a manuscript and was like, can we take this?
Cartoon dollar signs in the eyes, when they saw it. They were like, let's exploit an old woman. Make her famous character racist.
Every single writer has a manuscript that they just don't want to ever see again. They say, oh, I'm glad I made all my mistakes and that manuscript I'm not going to publish because that's dirt. And, you know, it's such a shocking betrayal. It's like when they released all those Jeff Buckley kind of live demos and extras. But we're not talking about them necessarily. We are talking about, amazingly, yet again, Peg has gone viral in Ireland.
Yeah, of course she has. And you know why she's gone viral in Ireland? She's gone viral in Ireland because, yet again, somebody was talking about the Irish language. Nothing to do with the education system, nothing to do with how the language is taught, absolutely nothing to do with the curriculum from 30 fucking years ago. And yet, the radio broadcaster who was hosting the programme, her first reaction to any story about the Irish language was, well, I hated Peg in school.
Wow. Yeah. So insightful.
I have the Ground Zero tweet here from Eoin Odia, in which he tweets, oh, great, a new presenter on this particular show. Here's hoping we get a modern debate on our language and what resources are needed to strengthen the Language Act currently in the Dáil. But first sentence, I hated Peg in school. Face palm emoji.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Really, face palm emoji. That's just every fucking Gael's reaction when this happens yet again. You mention in conversation or you walk around with your phone, yeah, or you're minding your business, speaking Irish, wherever you are, and then somebody comes in and says, do you know I hated Peg? Get over it, you weirdo.
Yeah, it's just
what is wrong with you?
Oh, so Peg Sayers, is it? I'm planning on doing that anytime I hear anyone speak English around me, I'm just going to start naming authors. English, is it? Wasn't a big fan of that Robert Ludlum. I felt the Bourne Ultimatum didn't tie up enough loose ends.
So, in back at
I'm sorry.
Yes, English, yeah. That's what they deserve. They don't deserve Shakespeare.
I struggled to think of an English author. I was.
So there's only a few, God love them.
Yeah, I know. Sure, look, it's a weird language. Why would you be writing that?
I know. They don't have a word for latte. Did you know that?
And they beat it into you in school.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, it's forced on us. Forced on us, Derek.
Forced down our throats, English was.
Yeah.
So this is the phenomenon. Back in December, when I was writing my review of the decade, I mentioned that we found that when Leo Varadkar was made Taoiseach, it was groundbreaking for a number of reasons. It represented a change in modern Ireland, one of which was he was the first Taoiseach born in the post-Peg era. He did his leaving cert in 1997, I believe, 3 years after Peg came, what was no longer a compulsory part of the Irish curriculum. Yeah. Some schools, some teachers who love to continue to teach it, but there are other texts available at that point.
Yeah, there's an optional element to the literature part of the Irish language leaving cert course. since the mid-90s. And of course, like some teachers realized the value of PEG as a book and, you know, what it teaches, in particular from a linguistic point of view. So they kept teaching it. And of course, some students at an honors level or at a higher level who had the option of studying a text of their own choosing decided to do PEG as well. And, you know, that's grand, because it's not that bad. But just this idea that Peg Sayers, or her book Peg, is representative of literally everything to do with the Irish language, it rings one alarm bell for me. And, like, you know, I my day job is working with older people. I'm not ageist, but as soon as somebody brings up Peg, my first thing is, are you old? You old.
It's like when someone says that, you know, I remember the first time, I think, if someone says it's a Tyler Perry movie, and I thought, oh my god, Aerosmith made a movie. I'm old. But anyway.
But I think actually, sorry, I just want to say that, like, I don't actually necessarily think it's older people, because I'm born in the post-PEG era, right? I was born in 1992. She came off the syllabus like quite soon after I was born.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, guys, I'm so young. But, like, you know, she's gone so long, but I think it's a trendy thing to say. Like, do you know the way the young kids now, they are like, oh, why do you say hang up the phone? But they still say hang up the phone, even though they have no concept for hanging up the phone. It's kind of the same thing. The youths of today are like, oh, Peg. You've no idea what Peg is because you never read it. Well, neither did the people who were complaining about it. But, you know, let that be said. But I think it's just sort of the trendy thing to say about Irish, or like the ha-ha, everyone like joshes and has a good time. Ha, is an Irish great? No, it's not. Peg, lol. And like, that's...
And yeah, and there's definitely a bit of that. And when Peg actually did come off the curriculum, we did a bit of research how Peg is a trope. And we've talked before about how, on our Hot Girl Summer episodes, how photographs of Peg often accompany articles about modern Irish policy or the current curriculum or
the Gaeltacht or anything at all to do with the Irish language. It's like the national newspaper's picture desk really only has one go-to, and the worst thing is it's always the same image of Peg.
Yeah, like everyone knows it. She's in the shawl in the house. Yeah, it's bleak and sad. Like
there are pictures of Peg Sarah smiling. They do exist. Yeah. Plenty of them.
But they don't feed the narrative, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, so I decided to go back to an early source to find someone who represents. I guess I had to find representative samples of people explaining why they dislike Peg. And what I did find was in the mid-90s, when the news was announced that Peg was coming off the curriculum, Joseph O'Connor, one of our greatest writers, in fairness, at the moment, and came up, wrote a screed of sorts, or a position on why he didn't like Peg in school. And we're just going to have that read out now, so you can, because I think he gets the police points across.
Shay, I thought to myself, since the happy day I finished my Leaving Cert a dozen long years ago, I've been waiting to hear this news. I am, as regular readers may recall, a bit of a lapsed Catholic. I'm not ashamed to say that on morning last week, when I heard Peg's demise, I got out of the lava and went down on my knees and thanked the Lord above for his mercies. Peg Sayers in the dustbin of history. Bliss it was to be alive at this dawn. Peg Bloody Sayers, the pox be upon her. May she be broiled over the hobs of Hades and then made to listen to the Kilfenora Cayley Band for all eternity. You remember what it was like, don't you, readers? You'd go into your Irish class feeling relatively content with your little self. Then the moon tour would open the book and begin to read aloud, and next thing you know, down would come the misery. Hit on lugger and log earth. Oh, alas, on ochon, affliction, agony, distress, pain, sorrow and woe, peppered with a light smattering of depression, despondency and heartache. Peg Sayers, the woman who lived to be 807 without ever being happy once. If there is one person at whose feet we might lay the near death of modern Irish, Surely it is Peg. Mawkish, cringing, miserable, forelock-tugging, acquiescent, superstitious, old baggage that she was. What a great idea it was to make us all read her. How relevant she was to our lives. What a great way to murder language. Peg Sayers was the droning voice of Irish failure, the kind of literary character that only a truly colonised society could produce. Her long overdue demise is cause for celebration. Na bea lehidia rishan, well boo hoo hoo, ochon ochon, agus dia idirshin, agus antuk.
And that's what Joe O'Connor thinks.
That's not that bad. You know what I mean? That's at least coming from the point of view of someone who clearly knows what's in the book and just didn't enjoy it. That's fine. I would do the same for Wuthering Heights. How is that even a classic of English literature? What a terribly written fucking book. Like, who's even supposed to be the narrator in that? Is it the person who bought Wuthering Heights, or the new housekeeper, or who's also the old housekeeper, or is it Catherine, or is Heathcliff talking? And hang on a second, isn't Heathcliff supposed to be black? What a clusterfuck of a book. It's terrible.
One thing is, there's some theories that Heathcliff is actually a Scouser.
Or Irish.
And this is I haven't read this.
This is never represented in the book. But anyway, as you point out, not everybody likes the books they read in school.
Yeah.
But
critically, just critically on this one, Joseph O'Connor is talking about the book in school. And you know what? Actually, that's fine, because if you studied the book in school and the topic of your discussion is that book in school, that's grand. Tell us you hate it. Tell us it was boring. Whatever you want, that's no problem. The key fundamental issue at stake here is if the topic is, oh, we need a senior minister for the Gaeltacht, the answer isn't Peg. If the topic is there's no broadband in Connemara, the answer isn't Peg. And if the topic is anything, summer colleges, if the topic is how Irish is currently taught in modern schools, the fucking answer isn't Peg.
What about fathers in software?
I think that's Peg's fault.
She did that. There's a notorious chapter in the book where she talks about software and fathers and the HSE and so on.
When she booked a seat on the train from the Blaskets to Dublin.
Sligo.
To Donegal, as there was at the time.
Yeah, you know, and if you'd have read the book, you'd have known. No.
So who was Peg?
Peg.
Garagine.
Well, Peg was a woman who lived in Kerry and then moved to the Blasket Islands. And she was a woman. I think what we need to consider when we're talking about Peg is the fact that it's a person who was on the syllabus, but like a well-known book in Ireland from the perspective of a woman, as told by a woman, and not like a normal woman of that particular generation and era and location. So this is a woman, Peg Sayers, who was born in Dunqueen in West Kerry and then moved to the Blasket Islands when she got married. She led, you know, a relatively difficult life, as one did in that time, in that place, with harsh conditions. I think she lost, was it 5 or 6 children? Do you know, she was supposed to go to America to emigrate with her friend. Was it Caught who went off to America? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Caught Boland.
And then got injured and couldn't fund Peg's journey. So she was kind of left back home. But, you know, she led a life and she was a Shanachie, which is like an oral tradition storyteller. And word kind of got around that there was this woman who was very good at telling stories. And her son eventually asked her to, you know, dictate her stories. She was illiterate in Irish because the education system at the time didn't teach you to write in Irish. So she couldn't write in Irish. So she dictated her stories and that became the basis for the book Peg. And yeah, it starts with, you know, she's an old woman now and she has one foot on the grave and one on the edge. And then goes on to tell, you know, folk tales of the islands and around Kerry and stories of her life. And from that particular perspective, I don't know why she's not considered, if we're going to give Jane Austen and Pride and Prejudice and Wuthering Heights feminist icon status, why don't we give it to Peg? This is a woman who gave her story and told her story literally in her own words, because there's recordings of it. And she gave that. And it's one of the very few women who has told their stories, when you think about Irish literature, that is well known and people know who she is, and it's in a minority language. Like, that's rare, and I think we should celebrate that more rather than focusing on all of the negative nonsense. And we'll get to the fact why it's nonsense later, but like, she was this, you know, in a sense, a revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was one of many, like, and you know, there was, you have to think of the context of the time. Like, there was, this was the land war. She was born in the 1870s, 1873. And as she was young, the land war in Ireland and the sort of the second generation, third generation of Catholic emancipation started to create a growing middle class that Peg was squarely not in. So all of a sudden, instead of being surrounded by people who were peers, she was being surrounded by people who thought that they were her betters. She was witness to a changing Ireland. She was witness to a nascent industrial Ireland. She was witness to an Ireland that was sort of seeing the end of a pure, brutal bayonet colonialism and the start of a new kind of consciousness of Irishness. And she saw all of that and she knew what was happening. So they come through in her stories. And, you know, she was one of many people on the Great Blasket Island that were visited by scholars as part of the, you know, Avjochan na Gaeilge, the Gaelic revival. So Robin Flower, who famously took down Tomás O'Criffin's stories and helped put together On Tillaonach, his seminal masterpiece of life on the Great Blasket Island. She was out there. She, as Garrity mentioned, she thought she was going to get to emigrate to America, but caught Ní Viola and caught Boland. She had an accident and couldn't send her the money. So Peg married Padraig Ó Gcuimhin from An Blascaith War and moved out to the island in 1892. She had 11 children, only 6 survived. It was a hard life, it was tough. But people started to visit the island in the early 20th century. Robin Flower, Carl Marstrander, lots of these Gaelic scholars, Cuno Meyer, even Lady Gregory was involved in the same movement. I'm not sure she made it to the Great Blasket Island herself. But they started interviewing people like Tomás O'Criffin and Peg Sayers. And they said, you know, they went into each community and they were like, tell us who are the storytellers. And these were the last keepers of the oral Irish history tradition, because as Garadine said, these people were functionally illiterate in Irish, could read and write in English, but had never been taught to read or write in Irish. So this was a totally oral language and a totally oral history. And if it was not for the likes of Tomás O'Criffin, Peg Sayers and other people around them in thousands of little villages around the country, the Irish Folklore Commission wouldn't have gathered stories. They got about 432 separate items of storytelling from Peg Sayers. From 1938 until 1953, I think, when she died, or 1958 when she died, sorry. The Irish Folklore Commission got, I think, in total about 350 legends, ghost stories, folk stories, stories about religious practices and traditions. Seosamh O'Dálaigh of the Irish Folklore Commission and I think Sean O'Sullivan as well. They went out to her. She wasn't too comfortable being recorded, so there's not many recordings of her voice. So they wrote it down, most of it down on pen and paper. And like people like her saved not just the language, but an entire tradition, an entire history. And without them, we really, really wouldn't have as much knowledge or as much consciousness of where we come from as a culture. And to have it reduced down to this lazy trope that the national broadsheets can throw out there as a picture on any article about the Irish language, it does her a massive disservice. It does Tomás O'Criffin a massive disservice. It does the whole of Avjochan na Gaeilge and Cunran na Gaeilge and the Irish Folklore Commission. It does them a disservice. It wouldn't be tolerated in any other, you know, sphere of our society or our culture. And yet, for some reason, it's just handy to throw it down as a trope, because Jesus, wasn't the book fucking miserable?
Yeah, and I think, like, she'd a right to be miserable. Jesus, like, you live in that society being gentrified around you. You're, you know, people leaving around you, people you love dying, living in harsh conditions. Yeah, it's beautiful, but Jesus, it's harsh out there. Like, you've a right to be miserable. Oh, my God. And listen.
Like, she's being told to smile.
Yes! She's been told to smile. Peg, would you ever cheer up, guy? Get fucked. Like, you know who never got told to cheer up? Shakespeare. And all of his stupid plays are tragic. Everyone ends up dead in the end. That's how all of his plays end. Even the comedies are tragic. Merchant of Venice, like an anti-Semitic, misogynistic tripe. That's what it is. It's like, ha-ha, isn't it gas? Because we got one over on the Jewish guy and the women had to dress up as men to be taken seriously. Ha-ha, what a hilarious story. Like, what? Peg has a right to be miserable. And she's not that miserable. As you said, there's plenty pictures of her smiling. She did smile for you, lads. You just need to find the right photo. God damn it. I said I wouldn't rant. And then here we are.
In some ways, there this is something that else come up that as like there is this kind of undercurrent in a lot of the peg bashing that a lot of women can really relate to. That, I mean, there's this misogynistic undercurrent to a lot of the comments with Absolutely. Peg about her appearance, about her demeanor, and the fact that she's talking.
Absolutely. I think it's so, like, there's an undercurrent of misogyny that you're not, like you said, you're not recognizing the fact that this is a woman telling her story in her words. And you're like, oh my God, she's so annoying and miserable. Like, sometimes women have miserable lives. Like, shock horror, women living in Ireland have had a miserable time of it. Like, I'm sorry, is that something that's news to you? Have you been living under a rock? And then I think there's also an element of ageism as well, because she's not a young, vibrant person. She's a woman who's lived her life and is at the, you know, the closing stages of it. Like, she's ready for the grave. That's how it starts. And she's telling back her life. And I think that's, you know, not the traditional woman you would have seen, the comely maiden who's ready to get married or whatever.
Yeah.
She's this older woman who's lived her life. And it's been sad for some parts of it, because that's how life is.
There's the other thing that, like, we really, really need to address the elephant in the room. We fucking love the misery. Like, why is this the exception to the rule? We love misery. Like, oh, Peg is miserable. It's not vibrant and exciting like King Lear or Macbeth. Like, what do you...
Or the field. The fucking field. Like, that's literally a stone's throw away from it. Set. Isn't it set in Kerry? It is, yeah. And, you know, miserable. The poor old Bull McCabe has a terrible time of it. Like, Tyne has a terrible time of it. Like, everyone's got no crack, you know. But we all love that story. Everyone loves that film.
Yeah, and, like, even the stuff we watch nowadays, even the stuff we watch now, like, we love the misery. Game of Thrones wasn't a lark. Like, you know what I mean? And billions of people watched it. It's, like... And this idea that, like, it's on the curriculum, it shouldn't be boring. What are you on about? Everything on the school curriculum is boring. Everything.
I think the context of studying it, and this is, I know Pat Inglesby was famously wouldn't let his poems be on this curriculum. I'm not sure if anyone ever asked, but he said he preempted them by saying he didn't want it because the act of studying them takes away some of the fun. But I suppose, like, for a lot of observers of the way, like, Ireland maybe is unusually obsessed with the education system in a way that I don't think that kind of that A-level results and A-level curriculums and issues like that get the same discussion in England. Or
yeah, it's not the same here either. Like, this is the state of affairs. My boyfriend, a Finnish man, knows who Peg is and knows he will laugh at Peg jokes. Like, that's the state we're in. Doesn't speak, he's like Duolingo level one of Irish. That's the extent that he has. Like, and he's like, ha ha, Peg jokes.
But the first thing the owl says to you on Duolingo is, wasn't Peg shite? Go on, ha ha ha. Banter.
And you have to answer yes so that you can get to the lessons.
Yeah, it's a, but, like, yeah, culturally, we have a very weird, so ever since free secondary education, which probably coincides around about the time of Peg's book being either published or put on the curriculum, ever since then, we have had this single model of secondary education where we funnel everybody into the Leaving Cert. Like, it really is, it's Pierce's murder machine times 1,000. So it's one size fits all. It's not like in Germany where you choose, do you want to go to the Realschule or the Hochschule or the Gymnasium, depending on what career you want to do. Everybody does the fucking Leaving. So for a significant period of time, everybody does Peg. So it was a cultural touchstone. But it was a cultural touchstone in a way that Macbeth or King Lear or Hamlet wouldn't have been, because it was our cultural touchstone and our culture. And one of the worst things we do on this island is ridicule and belittle our own culture. Yeah. It's forelock tugging, calf dopping nonsense. And we do it all the time.
Yeah. And I think it's so frustrating. When I was, when we were like prepping for this episode, I was thinking, I was like, we really need to interrogate why we find it so okay to ridicule who we are and part of what it means to be Irish, or part of our culture, a very visible part of our culture, be that literature, be that the language. And I think Peg, as we've said, is inherently connected to the language. I mean, she is, for a lot of people, like a mascot and a negative mascot for the language. And I think we really need to interrogate that. And it's a common feature of a post-colonial society, because what colonialism does to a society is colonize minds. So when you colonize the way people think, you don't need to make a prohibition to say you can't have your culture or you can't have your language, because they already think their culture and their language is uneducated or, you know, backward, or belongs on an island, or that belongs to the, you know, the tribal people or whatever it is. You see it in other societies as well, where, you know, maybe if you're talking about African colonized nations that have English as an official language, but nobody speaks English officially. You know, the language of the people is not English, but it's seen as like a more prestigious language. And I think that's evident in the way we talk about Peg, because it's a laughable, jokeable thing, because Irish is this twee, silly language that belongs on the islands, and people complain and moan in that language. And we're not recognizing that that's a leftover of colonialism. That's taught behavior that we have internalized and continue to internalize because we refuse to make peace with it. And I include in that, like, you know, I'm not saying it's the Brits at it again. A few weeks ago, we talked about this, Pather, you said it, that, like, you know, people need to take ownership over their lack of ability. You can't just say the language was taken from me, the Brits took it, and leave it at that. There comes a point where it's been how many years since, in the, at least the 26 counties, where we've had control over our own affairs. What's stopping you from interrogating the question of why do I think Peg is so backward? Why do I think the language as a proxy, or Peg being a proxy for the language, is so backward? And why is, how do I not see that as a strange thing? I think Irish is a dead language and the speakers who speak it are strange. You know, ask yourself why.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, that's absolutely it. Like, it is about this ownership. Because for so many people, the only interaction they have with the language that, you know, that we speak to each other. I know we use English on this podcast, but we speak Irish. I speak Irish every day. I speak to my son in Irish. I speak to my friends in Irish. Their only interaction with that language is school. And it is too much of a cultural leap for them to say, you know, I wish I had more engagement with the language, and I am not a qualified authority to speak about this. Instead, because it's our culture, because I should know about the language, I need to tie it back to my only experience of the language, which is the school system. So therefore, no matter what the fuck you say about Irish, my reaction is going to be either it's the way it's taught or Peg Sayers, because those are my, that's my narrow understanding of this entire culture, way of living, way of being, way of thinking, way of feeling. It all boils down to my own interaction with it, which is a pretty fucking limited interaction, but I can't bring myself to admit that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's an oversimplification. It's a lot easier to say, do you know, it was Mrs. Murphy's fault that I don't speak Irish. She was a really bad teacher. It was Peg's fault that I don't speak Irish. And yeah, there's problems with those things, but it's a lot easier to say that and point to it and then be done with it, and to actually interrogate the internal problem that we as a nation have, and that you as a person have, in a sense hating. Like, and I say that like kind of like subconsciously hating the self. And it's, you know, like you talk about it in say feminist literature, you talk about internalized misogyny, or in race literature, you talk about internalized racism, or with deaf people, diconscious autism, and how you have this internalized hatred of who you are, because that's the way, it's the way it's taught. We were taught to be that way. You know, the we were, as a society, internalized that and stuck with that. And then the attempts to roll back from that at the foundation of the state. So the attempts to sort of push Irish on people, it just didn't work, because they weren't thinking deeply enough about why, what people, they were thinking, okay, Irish was, we'll say, illegal or discouraged. Now we're just going to encourage it. When actually you needed to decolonize minds first. There's no way you can encourage it by just saying, we'll provide all the jobs. They're available to a limited few people. I mean, providing all the jobs is a nonsense anyway. But, you know, you just look at it on a surface level. You don't actually tackle the problem.
What is Dubland? We have to explain what Dubland is.
The Dubland podcast is an eternally pregnant woman.
I've been pregnant 3 times.
Yeah, but you've been pregnant since I met you.
Right, okay.
Hanging out with a neurotic middle-aged toddler. Mm-hmm. And the way that those two people from very opposing sides of the world see the world around them. Is that it?
Is that a good explanation of it? That's a very good explanation. You can listen on Spotify. You can listen on iTunes. You can listen on the Headstuff Podcast Network. We're on the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Up your Dubland podcast. Up your ear holes.
Something that I've been thinking about, and it's come up a couple of times with my discussions with other book people, is, you know, Ireland has had a pretty strong decade of book publishing in the 2010s, and one of the recurring trends is rural female voices, very honest, heart-wrenching memoir, elegant tragic memoir from regional voices, from female voices, from those outsider perspectives. I mean, Peg is much closer to the actual modern literary tradition in Ireland, and I'm thinking of books like Notes to Self by Emily Pine, Sinead Gleason's Constellations. I Found My Tribe. I can't remember the name of the author of that one straight away, but like a lot of the top prize winners at the Irish Book Awards and others have been part of this. Are closer to Peg than they are to I guess some of the reactions against Irish traditionalism in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, it's practically, it's normal people, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Only written way back when.
And less BDSM, I think.
is there BDSM in normal people?
Yeah, there's a little bit of it when she goes away to Sweden.
I have neither read the book nor seen the... I've only taken part in the Associated podcasts.
Oh, you haven't seen Dem Titties then?
No, I have not.
There's a little bit of it, yeah. It's a little bit, yeah. it's quite the adjustment if you grew up sexually repressed.
I didn't grow up in Sligo. I grew up in the sexual wonderland that is southwest Dublin. we're all here riding to bait the band, so it's not. Well, yeah,
that's what my mother told you. Me, you were all up there.
That's we had to keep the culties down.
But that takes us back to Peg.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Because, so there's sometimes people are defending Peg. What they do is they can't bring themselves to actually defend the book. And what they say is they talk about this kind of holy grail, what Peg should have been like if it wasn't butchered by the censors, by the Department of Education, and by her own son. And this is a theory that there's a pure filth version out there, because Peg was living on an island where everyone was kind of very cognizant of each other's business. People were close together. Everything happened in a room. People had to deal with, I guess, themselves in a community when people knew each other, a lot about each other. And that there was maybe, you know, Garsulacht.
Garsulacht, yeah. There's a bit of Garsulacht.
That's some Jackie nonsense. Like, sorry, there's no way a culty person came up with that theory, because let me fucking tell you, I might know your business, but I'm not going to talk about it. But I will in whisper terms, but not, you know, I'm not going to do it when anyone's taking notes. You know, I'm going to wink and nudge. That's all I'm going to do.
The one thing that is true, though, is that, like, as we've mentioned several times, because Peg was functionally illiterate in Irish, the book had to be dictated. And it was dictated to her son, Mike O'Gahean. And it is theorized widely that Mike suffered from undiagnosed bipolar disorder, that he was what would have been known at the time as a manic depressive. Now we've better terms to deal with mental illness, but that's what it would have been termed as at the time. And that has an effect on how the book actually made it to paper. And of course it had to be edited as well. So there's more than just Peg at stake here. And she actually, I mean, I've read her other book, Machnav Shenavana, is that what it's called? Machnav Shenavana, or in English, An Old Woman's Reflections. And okay, there's no writing in it, like, you know what I mean? It's not, but there is a bit of Garsulacht, and there is a bit of fun, and there's a bit of wit and wisdom. There's a sort of a glint in the eye of the author in it that's absent from Peg. Peg is it's gloomy, it's miserable, it's a it's a reflection on a very, very difficult life that was told to someone who had a very, very difficult life. And that sort of exacerbates the problem when you put pen to paper. Mm. And that does come true, but there's no, unfortunately, that is the base copy. That's the original. There's no holy grail out there. There's no hidden dirty peg. Like, there's no peg with willies and bums in it. Like, that's not out there.
A director's cut.
Yeah.
Oh, that's some weird Reddit post, like dark corner of the internet. Carry on. Is it, where's the dirty version? Like there isn't one, man. There's not a porn of everything. Okay. Before the internet, there wasn't a porn of everything. Okay.
I think you'll find there's going to be some peg fan fiction now.
I swear to God, do not tag me in it. I don't want to know. Please, God.
Blasket threesome gale again.
Oh, no.
This does a disservice to everyone who has died for Ireland.
The Blaskets have I suppose, a kind of place in, well, maybe the Aran Islands probably maybe get more tourism. Then the Blaskets, that seems fair enough to say.
Oh, yeah, and obviously. There's no one on the Blaskets. It's only recently been redeveloped as a tourist destination with an overnight accommodation option. You can stay in Peg Sayre's house, and there are full-time caretakers there to look after the place and look after your needs when you get on. But prior to that, the island was really only available for day trips, or for the more intrepid tourist, you could camp on it. You could sleep out under the stars. And look, that's great. Like, you don't want to see the Blaskets, you know, you don't want to see it. You know, I don't want to see an apart hotel opening on the Blaskets, if you know what I mean. They form an important part of our culture. Linguistically speaking, it was one of the last isolated language communities in the country.
Yeah.
Peg left in 1942. Things started to get a little bit too difficult for her being on the island. And there was a sort of a tapering off of people living on the island until the 50s, when there was a tragic incident that a young resident on the island got sick, and they couldn't get, because of stormy weather, they couldn't get medicine out. And the young man passed away. And at that stage, they kind of realized the writing was on the wall. And in the early 50s, they were all given houses in Dunchuin and the surrounding parishes, and they were brought off the island. So it was the end of a way of life in a big way, because all of the other islands that remain inhabited are either incredibly close to land or have a significant enough population to, you know, survive these sorts of things. The Blaskets, it was a very small, predominantly fishing community with a little bit of farming. It was a way of life that just doesn't exist anymore. Subsistence farming, subsistence fishing. Not very little interaction with on Mean Tir, the mainland. But there are little bits of it that, thanks to Peg, thanks to Tomás O'Criffin, and thanks to Carl Marstrander and Robin Flower and all the other scholars who actually went out to the island, we know an awful lot about the Blasket way of life.
Yeah.
And that is invaluable. That's priceless. Like, we know that they, for example, used to say going out to the mainland and into the island, like Siachar and Alan. And that's still what they say in Dunchuin. If you get into your Naivogue and you're heading for the Blasket, you're going Siachar and Alan. Which is just a fantastic worldview.
That's beautiful.
Like, a friend of mine is from Achill, and would often say that, like, Ireland is an island off the coast of Achill. And I love that.
That's so lovely.
I love that centralism. But that shines through in the likes of Tomás O'Criffin has this amazing book called Din Chanachas an Ilán. Din Chanachas being an Irish folklore term for, like, the place names of things and where they come from. Like, the island is not big. You can easily walk it, the whole lot of it, the whole area of the island, you could cover it in a couple of hours. It's very small. It's rocky cliff faces and difficult walks and all that. But every rock above a certain size, every field, every patch of grass, every beach, every portion of a beach, every headland, every promontory, everything had a name and had a reason for having that name. And it was documented. To have that connection, because that used to be the same all around the country, everywhere. My father-in-law often asks me, he'll turn around and he'll say something that sounds a little bit like an anglicized version of an Irish name, and he'll ask me, what does that mean? And I'll have to go, I don't know, can you spell it? He goes, no, nobody's ever written it down. It's the name of a field up above on the side of that mountain. And when his generation goes, that name will be gone, because it'll be gone from the folk memory and no one will ever remember what that little field was called. But thanks to interventions by others, we know what they were called on the Blasket Islands. So we get an insight into how life was. And like, that's amazing. And it deserves far more fucking respect than people saying it's a miserable. Of course it was a miserable book. It was not an easy fucking life. Living on an island where you can't get any food into the island if it's stormy, where people are going to die because you can't get medicine over, because where you have to take care of all your healthcare needs yourself without a fucking doctor on the island. Half your kids are going to fucking die because we don't have modern medicine. Like, it's Ireland at the time was a shithole, and living on an island made that shithole multiply your difficulties exponentially. So to look back at that,
we've found somewhere even wetter and with less services.
Yes, let's go.
But I think it's indicative of this rejection of Peg, that it's so boring, and I think that's, again, maybe that's the culture in me that just like has an inherent hate of Jack Eanes. But like, it feels like bourgeois Dublin, leafy suburb. Oh, that's not what the Irish speaking community is about. We're so cosmopolitan. We have coffees, you know, like that's how culty I am, that I'm like, coffee, that's so cosmopolitan. You know, I remember my teachers drinking Nescafe, the instant coffee. And I used to think they were so cool when I was a child, because no one I knew drank coffee except teachers who'd been to college in Dublin. But, you know, it's this idea that we're going to reclaim the language in this bourgeois sort of like sophisticated elitist. And we've talked before about elitism in Ireland, but like, there is an element of that. I do think that the rejection of this, like this existence of a very small elite that we're saying Irish isn't like that. And then the recognition, the sort of conflict between those two communities that, of course, Peg doesn't represent. She represents a different thing. When in actual fact, she still fucking represents what it's like being in the Gaeltacht, not having roads, not having Wi-Fi, not having access. Like, if you're pregnant and you live on the Aran Islands, you have to come over and knock around in a hotel before you give birth, because it's not, you know, it's not safe because there's no facilities there. And I don't know, am I saying build a hospital on Inishmore? I don't know. I'm not a city planner. But what I am saying is these communities are still underserviced. And pretending that she doesn't represent, and her story doesn't represent life, as he said, life back then, and a beautiful, cultural, rich heritage of what life was like, but also is still very relevant to societies that exist today and to this day, and are still gasping for resources and recognition. And this idea, we were saying it earlier, that there's this idea, Father, you were saying it, that like, a Peg is sort of seen as this like naggy complainer, and then so is people who live in the Gaeltacht, who are like, hey, could we get a bit of Wi-Fi? And everyone's like, well, you get all the jobs and all the grants, so you're just like, excuse me. These people are looking for roads and internet access so they don't have to leave and move to Dublin or to Galway City or to Cork City in order to live rich and full lives. They want to live where they live in their communities, but they can't because they're not serviced. Sounds a little bit like Peg.
Which is a reality that we don't want to face. Like, there was a lovely story during the week on Indigenous Peoples Day about our good friend Naomi O'Leary, and how she retweeted a Diné or Navajo NASA engineer, and it all of a sudden raised nearly €1 million from Ireland for the Navajo and Hopi nations in a sort of a repayment of what the Choctaw Nation did for Ireland during the famine. And there were a load of people who replied to this lovely, lovely, touching story about how Native Americans, you know, it helped the Irish people during the famine, and now Irish people are helping the Native Americans during the COVID-19 pandemic. And there's a load of people really eager to reply to that and say, actually, the famine was caused by bureaucratic failings. We exported more food and resources than we needed. The Irish people were deliberately starved. They didn't have to die. It's a galaxy brain take to realize, or to not realize rather, that that's what's fucking happening to the Navajo now, today. I mean, for God's sake, just think outside yourself. And the failure to do that, the failure to realize that there are still people, fuichos, there are still people oppressed in loads of different parts of the world that you might be surprised about, I think it can be directly related back to not wanting to face up to the idea that Peg represents a reality and not a fucking fantasy.
I think that's a good place to leave off there, lad.
I think so. And what do you think the future holds for Peg?
Oh, more of the same shite. Like, sorry, I don't for one second think we're going to revolutionise the way people think about Peg, because the people who think what they think about Peg don't fucking listen to our podcast, that's for sure. And the next time I tweet about teachers, I'm going to get some person in my replies being like, well, did you ever hear of Peg? Blocked. Immediately blocked. That's how I deal with that now. I'm not engaging with that anymore. I'm not going to send them a link to this podcast. Sorry. That person is beyond reprieve. I can't. I'm just... We're not going to change the way people view Peg. Next year, in the next 2 months, we're going to see some article about Irish and they're going to use that same fucking photograph. I'd imagine most people who are aware, most of our listeners know what we're talking about. You know, we don't have to provide that image. You know the image because you've seen it a million times. We've not changed anyone's minds. I don't know. I mean, am I too pessimistic? I don't know.
I think we could. I think we could, though. Like, I mean, I think that there is some hope out there because, as I said, like, and I fundamentally disagree with the idea that people who are using Peg have no experience of it and that it's gone fully into our consciousness as a trope. I don't think that's taken hold yet. It is still people, and I hate to say this, people of a certain age who are doing it. It's people who did their leaving cert in the, you know, up to and including the very early 90s who are doing this. And eventually, at some stage in the far distant future, they won't be on the radio anymore. They won't be on the television anymore. And they'll have to come up, their successors and the people who follow them will have to come up with some other bête noire, some other straw man argument for the Irish language. I mean, I long for the day when somebody starts talking about demanding Gaeltacht rights in 2075, because they still want a broadband. They'll barely have running water. Like, in 2075, they'll be an afterthought for whatever government comes in that time. And somebody's going to say, oh, Irish, is it? Well, when I was young, you had to watch Dahi O'Shea and Hector on the television. You know, there will be something else, but it won't be Peg. And maybe at some stage in that far distant future, people could actually read what she wrote. And people could actually enjoy what she said.
And then she
can
put the other leg into the grave and die. God love her. Jesus, yeah, Christ, she can that stop, woman suffered enough.
She could stop spinning in her grave. But if you do read what she wrote, because... The one thing about Peg is Peg was a pop culture figure at the time because, you know, her book was, you know, her book was known. Her writings were known while she was alive. I know that the version that I read anyway was published in 1974, long after she was departed. But she was known and she was famous and, you know, she was somewhat of a, maybe even a divisive figure back then. But she was... definitely loved and mourned when she died. And I think, Derek, you were mentioning before we came on the air about the 10th anniversary and that there was a bit of a sweetness to how she was remembered.
Yeah, very much. And in the 10th anniversary, Cúir Ádóilg would have been one of the speakers, and there was a commemoration on the newspapers just talking about how, you know, that how Peg and how well loved she was. And one of the speeches was that to let the people of Kerry, that this storytelling tradition belonged to them, not that this is something that they had to avoid, but it was something that they were encouraged to actually directly engage with. When she was sick in the 1950s and she came up to Dublin in a hospital, there were daily reports in the newspapers on how she was doing, because she there were enough people who cared that much about her. Like, yeah, she would have been a very popular figure, very well reviewed, and it did seem, yes, that it was years later when the actual trope started setting in, probably along with other rejections of Irishness. It's some people seem to think some people found that maybe their opinion of the Blasket Islands was possibly colored by anti-Hawaii feeling.
I'll take any excuse to hate Charlie Hawaii, but I mean any excuse at all. And yes, it's a national disgrace that he bought an island. Like, for Christ's sake, imagine like the leader of the country buying one of the country's islands. Like, it's like something you'd hear in, it's like something you'd see in a poorly written American fiction about an African republic. Like, it's not actually reflective of what an African republic is like. It's like what Yanks think an African republic is like, where the tin pot dictator decides to buy himself a holiday island off the coast of the country. And he did. He fucking did it. Like, they still own the Shaggin Island. Like, the family does.
I watched that period of Reeling in the Years like like a soap opera, because I'm like, what? How did you guys let this happen? He bought a fucking island. He had a £300 shirt and he was telling all of you not to spend money. What is this? Like, it's entertainment beyond, you know, apart from the fact that it was real life and people had to live through it.
While also having a relationship with the country's top gossip columnist. I mean,
sweetie. Yeah, yeah. Himself and Terry Keane.
Who was married to a judge? Was it Supreme Court or High Court? It was Justice Keane's Supreme Court.
Possibly.
Supreme Court, I think. Yeah. He might have been High Court and then Supreme Court.
Yeah. Well, Mrs. Keane was riding the Taoiseach. Yeah, that was. She wrote a book about it. She wrote a book about it called Sweetie, which is what she called him. She said he was lovely. Yeah, but anyway, I love Charlie Hyde, but I mean, I would love to say that Margaret Thatcher is the reason I hate the English language. It's not exactly true.
Yeah,
and Charlie Hyde is not the reason people hate Peg. But I mean, look, if we can blame Hyde for it instead of Peg, I'm good with that. That's a nice solution.
I like that. Sure, blame him. Why not?
At the time, I think he may not have been in government at the time when he actually bought it. And I think the idea was that he'd take better care of it than the government would, and that he reintroduced a couple of deer to the island. And
what's the government in the end? What is this?
Listen, this is how there's a long-standing tradition of establishment politicians in Ireland presenting themselves as outsiders.
The next time somebody from that generation says something to me along the lines of, well, in my day, I'm just going to point them directly toward that. Like, this is what you allowed in your fucking day, all right? What?
You left the Charvet short-wearing Taoiseach. This is a man who smuggled guns for the IRA and yet still managed to be... He was a gun runner who managed to become the leader of the country, and you let him buy a fucking island.
We don't know that he definitely did that.
I thought it was fairly... Allegedly, then. Can we allegedly...
You can't defame the dead, it's fine.
Grand, so he definitely did it.
He liked to imply that he did while saying he didn't, so it was a tricky situation. But what we do know is this isn't a story about Charlie Hyde. This is a story about Peg, but also about Manana Haran. And what I did want to do was give the last word in this episode to people who don't hate Peg, to women in Ireland who find her story relatable and want to tell us why they love her and her work so much. So, as we say goodbye, and thank you both for helping me in this enlightening discussion, I want to hand over the mic.
Peg Sayers. Who else is dead 60 years and trends on Twitter every 2 weeks? Peg. When shite radio DJs are desperate for some buzz, who can they always invoke? Peg. She's the epitome of living in people's heads rent-free. She somehow has the power to single-handedly kill a language that isn't dead, ruin school children's lives despite not being on the syllabus for a few generations now, but at the same time she's no use to anybody, don't bother reading that, no, shite. You know her full name, but one syllable and everyone knows who you're talking about. And that one syllable has the power to ruin a dinner party, depending on the company you keep. Peg is the original triple threat. Not only a ban, a Sian Van, she's the Sian Van Vught. Everything you're not meant to value. She's a woman, she's old, she's poor, she's rural, and she's carrying on like we were never colonised. Now there's a dangerous example to set.
So Peg Sayers is my cousin, or rather my first cousin three times removed, but who's counting? The way I relate to her as an Irish woman is she isn't the first, nor will she be the last woman whose contributions to a vital project have been scorned, undervalued, ignored, ridiculed, made fun of. And her legacy has been tarnished by the fact that people have decided she was miserable, she was boring. She's been done so dirty in Irish culture, partly because her works were taught in the wrong way to bored teenagers. That is not her fault. That is the fault of the curriculum setters. She truly was an encyclopedia of folklore, of ghost stories, of turns of phrase, of jokes. And she is really only now being appreciated as a well-rounded individual. People are so shocked to hear that she was a funny person. Why are you shocked? Most people are funny when you give them a chance, when you take the time to understand them. She went through so much hardship, the oppression that we live with and more, the pain of separation, of emigration, and she was still smiling, surviving, thriving, overcoming so much hardship. I am so proud of her. And I think we can all relate to the feeling of being misunderstood.
Something that baffles me is the fact that Dini Fosa Garan Fuilor Alishad her skull is one of Fiho Blaino Hin. Toshide Garan Fuilor that hasn't been on the curriculum since the last century. When I was born, Peg wasn't on the curriculum. But they still have a hatred towards the Irish language because they didn't like one book in school.
Is Marial Huinig Sula Peg Sears Gwil Me Covrodul Asma Quid Gwilga August Asin Sela Kaham Tri Gwilga Lemacharj August Le Mnaloidra Ella Is Sail Gwilga Ta Anumrka Shkelta Jultka Klishta Ogan Unumian Verla Nakul Karamakta Loidaku Shkel Carrot Feg August and Sail Bikacha Eki August of Winning Usad As on Lair Scrive She le cáfa nuas winter na Gaeilge agus na Gaeil tachtag a cur mu ama I an tanga agus tá arin mar Gaeil agus tá arin mar rá freshen sell a glacha scéal feig é rá lenar báistí agus lenar gairde agus na rudi íntaca a rinnisí in a sail na rudi do chreidir ar bhain si amach bhí si mar bhean láidir chrua agus dimar si an tionchar dearfach Hail na Gaeilge agus winter in na Gaeil tochta sanam a láthair agus cáthamuid na scéalta sin aintean agus cáthamuid a bheith bródúil os dínig cosú le peg agus a bheith buíach os dú os nóraí íntaca atá siad tarais tóir dúan agus an Gaeilge a leirt agan go fóil sanam a láthair.
I never got to study Peg in school, but I really, really wanted to, despite the way she was viewed by people within my age group. I remember reading something about her in a newspaper when I was really, really young about how her best friend had left for America and how she had written about the incredible hardship and the way that they lived on the island. But also she had written about this great sense of community and a type of solidarity that they had with each other. Peg Sayers was a phenomenal woman in her own individual right, having gifted hundreds of folklore tales to Ireland. But I've always felt that there was something else going on there. Peg was a woman with a story to tell in an environment, very conservative Ireland, where people were largely not all that fond of listening to what women had to say and simultaneously trying to collectively prove that Ireland was more than a horse and cart misery. And I think a great disservice was done to her in many ways. So as someone with a graw for folklore and a good yarn, I have a deep appreciation of Peg and a love for Peg and the way she speaks about her land and her people with an affection and a fairly brutal honesty. But Peg had a great humour and there's a lot of love and fun as well as a sadness in her writing. And for me, that's always worth listening to.
Hi, my name's Sinead, I'm 24 and I recently read Peg and came to the conclusion that I absolutely adore her and you should too, even if you didn't enjoy studying her for the Leaving Cert. So I decided to read Peg because I was sick of the negativity surrounding her story on social media and I wanted to form my own opinion. And the standout takeaway for me was that I find it so sad that, you know, Peg wasn't this like really self-involved narcissist wanting to talk about all of the hardships she faced. But she had to be persuaded and convinced that her story and life was one worth sharing. And she did this reluctantly in order to contribute to Irish language literature. You know, she said, Yeanus, grieve me yeehild and changan. And she did that and she bore her soul, she wore her heart on her sleeve. And she gave us every gruelling detail about all the hardships that she faced in her life. And my own personal understanding of life in the islands are way better for it. And I wish I could thank her personally.
To be known as a master storyteller, Peg Sayers must have been enthralling, charismatic, remarkable. How many such women have we forgotten, tried to stamp out or rewritten into hags and demons? I read the book Peg when I was 19, under no obligation. It was one of very few books in Irish I'd ever even heard of, having come through English medium education. I went looking for a copy in the library at college, found the Irish section, and within the year I had changed to an Irish college course in a different university. Fast forward, I manage on Shuppleower, Conor na Gaeilge's Irish language bookshop in Dublin. I know more than a few books by now in the Irish language. And I meet the people discovering Peg Sayers, seeking her out or revisiting her. You wouldn't have a copy of Peg, would you? They expect her to have been eradicated by now. I am grateful to the folklorists who collected from her for their foresight and for understanding her worth. Their efforts maintained by the National Folklore Collection and the Blasket Centre. They have made it possible for us to tell and to retell the story of Peg Sayers. In Shomish Ishkeil. In Shomish Arishta.
For me, Peg Sayers is important because she has one of the most influential voices in a history where real women's voices, and particularly rural women's voices, were rarely represented on their own terms. She survived post-famine poverty to become one of the greatest chroniclers of Irish life. And through our own language, she preserved a part of our collective story that would otherwise have been lost forever. So she deserves huge respect for that.
Nasan mar gael agus gohira mar mehain mar gael manol gheart of a brodul as peg agus of a you know massive agon ar hi mar is so gheart gheanro di ban a vienti you know scrif si no near scrif si ach din is si bresh as 3 cage scale var si gudina hochto di deran chat mai capa keg or gawur galor di na winter lehi vol Spilirger ban loider, you know, avar if a wad e agus be scale to granver eki, kegan canirimid urn there and a scale to durha and a scale to gruma, vi grin lefekal and a scale to agus tam widget rate anachud grin all on a scale to lehedi des bishop a yenin PC fufuhi agus darnoe anachud litriachta. A hannig as peg agus an scéilíocht a bhí eki seanach iad an chéad scoth a bhí inti agus you know hug si solas ar lehédi an dangan an counter sin na blascaid smuini mid a gónaí ar peg nor smuini mid ar na blascaid mar sin yeah masam gur éirinach mná íntach a bhí inti dan fear loider gur cheart dún a bheith brodú lasti go hirin mar vrá éirinacha agus mar ghine éirinacha bhí si íntach ar go leor bali agus anachuid tocha eki do litriacht na héirin agus do chultúr na héirin.
Hey mother fagor is me se ilsnigi agus yeah I'm just gonna chat about why I love Peg so much because honestly, what a legend. Like, that woman, I swear, like, she's, like, as someone that didn't have to learn her for, like, you know, because I'm from the north, I didn't have to do, like, leavings or anything. So I never had to, like, learn her stuff. But then I, like, chose to read it. And, oh my God, like, it's so good. She does not deserve the hate she gets, first of all. Like, the fact that, like, she died in 1950-something and she's still chatted about today, even if it's in like the awful light that like some news columns tend to put her in when it's exam season down south and all. Like, even if it's in that awful light, the fact that she has enough like reach that even to this day she's being talked about, this is a motherfucker podcast where we're discussing Peg, like, that's insane. Like, there's very few people that whose like legacy has lasted that long, and I think that just goes to prove how just amazing that her entire like thing was, like how amazingly she's an unbelievable storyteller, and just she doesn't deserve the hate. I am starting the Peg fan club and I would like to invite you all to join. We will have monthly meetings over Zoom and everyone can bake cookies and sit around and we can read Peg to each other so that we can, you know, vibe. I mean, that sounds like fun, actually. I was about to say I'm joking, but that does sound like fun. Slangafoil, Ahara?
Thank you very much for listening to our episode today. It was a special one for us. I was putting this one off for a long time because of the enormity of the topic. And I'm so glad that Pat are encouraging helped me out for this one.
We also want to say a thank you to Kirsten Scheel, who does our artwork. She's fantastic. And to Brian at Grooves Ahead for doing all of our wonderful editing and production.
And a very special thank you this week to all of our wonderful friends of the podcast who shared their own special memories of Peg earlier. That's really something special and very, very, very moving. And don't forget that you can support the podcast at patreon.com/Darek. So please, please do, because it helps us to create more content, including exclusive Q&As and interview sessions just for our patrons. That's patreon.com/Darek.
Until the next time, mind yourselves. Slunkfall.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
That's fine coat, loads of pockets in it.